What's the most important resource that you have? If you really thought about this deeply, I think you'd come to the same conclusion that Joey and I did. It's time. In our newest book, What's Without Wall Street, The 3 Steps to Financial Freedom Through Passive Income, we talk about how are we tracking that time? What is the thing that we can do to get more of that time back?
That's right. If you've ever been listening to our podcast and thought, man, it would be amazing if I could take all the things that you guys have learned over the last 10 years and just summarize them, put them in some way to easily digest them and take action, that's what this book is all about. You're not going to want to miss it. Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/newbook and get your copy today.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Have you ever had the thought, I really am not saving enough for the future? And at the same time, you're sitting down to write an enormous check to the IRS every single year for $100,000, $250,000, $500,000 in taxes? Guess what? We just found the money that you should be saving, and it's been under your nose the entire time. Go to freetaxwebinar.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com and learn how the wealthy are paying less in taxes. You can implement these strategies so that the next check you write will be to your financial future and not to the IRS. Welcome. This is the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Your host, Joey, the Italian Stallion Murray, joined as always by Russ, the windfall guy, Morgan.
The windfall guy.
Oh, I mean, I guess you could call it that, right? You said it was a piece of real estate or a mistake that you sold. Is that right?
Well, yes. I did buy a piece of real estate in 2007 that was a mistake.
Hey, who didn't buy a piece of real estate in 2007?
This is so bad, though, Joey. I don't like having mistakes. I would prefer to avoid mistakes. But since I made one, I'm willing to share it with you so you don't make the same ones, which is buying real estate at the top without knowing anything about what you're buying.
Well, and also, we've said this on the podcast before, you are betting on the flip or the come, and you knew nothing.
Well, yeah. So
you weren't buying for cash.
Here's a few of the mistakes, right? I bought it based upon its appreciating value, where it was going to go. It was negative in cash flow. The first 8 years, it was negative in cash flow. I kept paying. This is where this mistake's building and building. We had to have a management changeover. That was a mistake. Mm. We had several units next of ours that flooded our unit from time to time. That was a mistake on their part.
Which just to keep things live. Yeah.
Nothing like getting a call from ServPro, right? Like, we became fast friends there for a while. But finally, we closed on that property, and I opened up a FedEx envelope yesterday to a $20,000 repayment of all the mistake money that I'd sent into it.
Well, and I love that you called it a repayment, because really, a windfall of any sort is really, you don't have to even wonder where to put that money.
Right.
Right? You have a system. Your infinite banking policy system is already has holes in it. We call those loans. And you can now shove that money right back into one of those policies.
That 20 grand is going right back into a life insurance policy. Right where it came from to start off with, it's going back in there. And it's going to hopefully find some friends. It's going to start multiplying, right? It's going to be fruitful and multiply.
Get you some friends. Come back home now.
That's right.
So that is fantastic. Now, we are talking about the subject of equity today.
Yeah.
Right? Creating equity. You didn't purposely create equity with that condo. It did create equity on the backside of you making payments and of a little bit of appreciation.
Well, I did have someone else making mortgage payments for the most part. I was making a few extra over and above for about half the time that I had it. It was not perfect, but yeah, I built a little equity in it and I got that equity back. And so yesterday, I think it was appropriate for us to be talking about building equity in a house, right? Because there's there's a lot of conversation. I just got back from an event out in San Diego, some very successful people, and there was conversation toward the end of the event about paying off debts. Should I do that? If I have the money, if I have the cash flow, what should I do? Should I pay off debt or should I not? And I think it's appropriate as for us to talk about paying off a house, right? Building equity in a house. So here's the question to you, Joey. Am I really trying to create equity? Is that my important aspect? Or am I trying to remove a payment, get out from underneath the debt?
Personally, I can tell you, I've heard both sides of the argument. I've heard a lot of people with more of a scarcity mindset saying, I want to get rid of the payment. I don't want to owe anybody. I don't want the bondage, you know, fill in the blank. Or very few people do I see saying, man, this is my opportunity by paying down this house, creating equity. I can then leverage it. I can buy more real estate. I can do other things to create additional cash flows. That's more the rare side, but I'd love to hear from anybody that's listening to go on our Facebook page, do a comment, tell us what you think. Is it more about removing the payment or creating equity?
So I was actually doing a little reading on this, Joey, and the old French. I know that you probably go and you look up the old French on.
I look at the new French, actually.
All the words that you have, we. The old French on the word mortgage is actually dead pledge.
No wonder people want to get rid of those things.
Did they ever tell you that whenever they were signing you up as a mortgage officer that you were a dead pledge officer?
Somehow they left that out on the startup, the onboarding.
The description, they probably would. That would have sort of been a little buzzkill to your new job, right?
No question.
Well, I do think, though, when you think about that, some people feel that. They feel like I'm pledging to the death. Like, especially if you're older. Like, if you're older than, say, 50, and the question a lot of times is, do I want to have a 30-year mortgage? This thing may be longer than I am.
Yeah, nobody wants that feeling. But we need to talk today about how do we make the discrepancy between building equity in a house versus building equity in a policy. Today's not about should we pay off a house or not. It's how.
Well, I do think that's an important stance because I think the strategy should be what are the benefits to both, right? I'm going to pay off a house. I want to build equity. Should I do it through a traditional means, making extra monthly payments to the mortgage company until it's paid off? I'm done.
That's one option.
Option two is that should I use a life insurance contract, put cash in it, take loans against those policies, and then pay down the bank until it's done?
Option two.
Or I'm going to throw out a new one for you, Joey.
Uh-oh.
This is mixing it up. This
All
is
right.
just being
All
crazy.
Right. Bring it on.
This is the idea guy at work right here. Option three is I have a mortgage at a bank. I have a life insurance contract that I'm shoving every extra dollar I possibly can in, and I'm building equity in it until its balance is as big as the mortgage. And in my head, I do a check mark and I say, mortgage paid off, but literally keep the money still in the insurance policy.
Okay. So I've heard you break this down before about the different columns, assets and liabilities. So in your mind, I think that's where you're kind of headed with this. You have the asset of the life insurance policy and you have the liability of the mortgage and they equal each other. Now you're net zero, right? Well, you're quote unquote paid off, even if it's not physically paid off.
Well, and here's what I want to do. I want to kind of, like you said earlier, I don't want to say this is not a do I pay off my mortgage, yes or no. The answer is yes. But I want us to break it into one of three categories. And I'm not here to tell you which one of these three you should do. I will tell you which one I'm doing, and I'll tell you why. But I want you to think about this. So open up just a little bit on this, because this is, to me, the key to building wealth is that we've got to get different perspective. And I won't say this has always been my perspective, right? I've adjusted as I've seen other successful people. But here's one of the things I've seen. Is that, Joey, do you have a rewards point credit card in your pocket?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Why?
Well, I mean, if you're going to spend the money, you might as well get a little benefit for it, right?
So give me an example, Stallion, of something that you bought recently using that rewards point credit card.
Well, I love using the Best Buy deal. I bought my laptop with it.
Oh, okay. Right?
You get a little extra 5% kicker just by using that card.
Nice. So you used your rewards point card in order to buy the laptop, and it gave you some extra points.
Yeah, absolutely.
Could you have paid cash for it?
Yeah.
If you would have paid cash, what would you have given up?
I would have given up the points, the 5%.
Okay, perfect. That is what I have started thinking about as we look at how we're going to build equity in a different way to pay off our mortgages is maybe using our life insurance policy, thinking about it as a rewards points card, if you will, or a rewards point, you know, process that we get something else by using it versus going directly. Because you could have taken cash out of your pocket, given it to Best Buy, done. Don't need to do it.
Right, right.
But when you took it out of your rewards points, you use your credit card, you paid for it, then you took money out of your pocket and you had to send it to the credit card company to pay for it.
That's right.
Was it the same dollar?
Yeah.
But what did you get?
I got an extra 5%.
And you got the laptop.
Right, both.
You got two. It's sort of like Spinal Tap, right? This thing goes to 11. It's one more.
Okay, if you don't know what he's talking about, we'll put a link to the video in show notes.
Well, if you don't know what it is, go back to the 80s and 90s. It exists. But no, it's the concept, and this is where my brain goes to when we're trying to build equity, right? We're trying to create net worth. Is thinking just a tad bit differently about what we're doing. Because I, too, want to not have a death pledge or dead pledge, as the old French says, in mortgage. But also, I don't want to do it in a way that is actually ineffective, that's giving me less benefit.
That's right. In fact, I think we should really break this down for a second, Russ. We should talk about equity in a house. Like, when you're doing that, You're paying extra. What benefits do you get for that versus when you're paying into a policy? Because I think this is the differentiation we need to make.
All right, so we got to use some numbers. Let's say income is $20,000 a month, right? Is that
right.
Middle ground enough? $20,000 a month income. First things first, I can't be spending every dollar I make.
Yeah, it's impossible to create equity if you spend every dollar that you make.
All right, so let's say—
doesn't matter where you're putting it.
Let's say I'm saving 20% of my income. So that would make— I was saving $4,000, right?
Yeah.
So I'm spending 16 on taxes, lifestyle, and everything else, and $4,000 is being saved.
Okay.
Right, so I could take that $4,000 and I could do one of two things. I could make an extra payment to my debt with it, right? Reducing my debt, building equity. Or I could take the $4,000 and I could put it into my life insurance policy, which would be building equity.
Right.
And in essence, reducing or increasing my net worth at a rate faster than my liabilities. So would I be in the same position? So let's use easy math. I had a $300,000 liability and I paid down $4,000 extra on it. How much do I owe at the end of the—
You're at 296.
My net worth in that game is 296 plus whatever the house is valued at.
Right.
Right? If I had a mortgage at $300,000, I didn't make any extra payments, but I put an extra $4,000 in my insurance equity. So I built up assets of $4,000, right? My net worth at the end of the month is how much?
296.
I'm in the same position. Now, do I get some extra benefit from doing option B versus option A?
Well, you get a death benefit.
Ah.
I mean, at least that.
Is that more or less than the 5% on your rewards credit card?
I say significantly more.
It potentially is.
Now, you got to die to get it.
I mean, hey, you know, there's nothing like dying.
A little give and take.
Well, but here's the thing is that if it's a death pledge, right? If I'm literally going to pledge on this mortgage till death, I'm not going to pay it off in the traditional sense, then do I have something to validate that pledge?
Absolutely.
Do I have something that comes in that takes care of that?
Now, don't forget this too. If something were to go wrong and all of a sudden your income flipped or something went wrong and you needed extra cash, can you go to the equity in the house and go get it?
I could in two ways or three ways, which really two are the same. I could sell the house, I could refinance the house, or I could take out an equity loan.
Right. And in all three of those ways, there's limitations.
Yeah. I mean, if I...
But you really want to stay in the house...
Yeah. If I want to stay in the house, then option one's out the window. I have to refinance or have an equity loan.
And you have to then be subject to whatever terms the bank is willing to allow you to borrow that money back.
Well, and I know that. So that's an issue there. Like if we're dealing with the banks, they're the ones that are going to make interest off the money that I am borrowing from them, right? Right? I'm using someone else's money. It may have been the money I had at the bank to start off with.
So I want to contrast that with that money that you've put over here in this life insurance policy and you now have access to at least a portion of it, most of it, if not all of it, long term, but initially you at least have a portion of it. So that to me is a big difference. If we're trying to build equity, what do we want that equity to do? What are the characteristics of that equity? Do we want to be forced to either sell the house, refinance it, or get an equity line? Or do we want to be able to have access to it anytime? That's a big discrepancy.
It is. Well, I want to go back just a second on this.
Okay.
What keeps us from paying down on a house, or what keeps us from building equity in a house? What do you think is one of the biggest
hurdles? Well, I can tell you, me personally, it's the mental gymnastics of that. What we just explained in a mortgage, I remember in a car loan.
Okay.
So I'm in the mortgage business. I'm high commission sales. So sometimes there's big swings in income. And I may have gotten like a $20,000 extra kind of a bonus this month. And I'm sitting there. I'm sitting on that cash and it's burning a hole. Right. And I feel good about having it. But at the same time, I'm like, man, I need to do something with this. I may have a car loan out here that's $30,000. How likely do you think I was to take that full $20,000 extra and dump it on that $30,000 car loan?
Well, you're probably tempted. I mean, the money.
Very much.
Yeah. I mean, you're like getting rid of it. But my guess is you probably didn't do it.
Well, no, because guess what? I knew in the back of my mind, man, this was a great month. But guess what? Next month's coming. And the next quarter's coming. And I don't know what those things hold.
You're playing the what-if game, aren't you?
The what-if. Because if I put that $20,000 down, I know the only way to get it back is I got to call up the car company. Hey, by the way, guys, I need to borrow some of that money back. I paid you extra last month. Can I just get a little bit of that back?
Yeah, you're not getting in that.
How likely is that going to happen?
Well, have you ever called and got that money back? Like, I mean, I guess somebody has refinanced a car before, but that's just not everyday practice.
Well, it's just going to be a conversation like, yes, Mr. Muir, we'll be glad to give you that money, but you just need to fill out this paperwork. And by the way, here's the terms and here's the conditions
of
that money.
Well, I mean, just a year and a half, 2 years ago, you and I did a car loan for a guy who was in that position, right?
Didn't he
take and had paid off a car, and then a couple months later had gotten himself in a position where money wasn't coming in. He'd gotten behind on some other payments, affected his credit score. He couldn't refinance the car. So he came looking for private money.
That's right. That's right. So I think that is the, in my mind, the number one reason why we don't create more equity is we're afraid to give up access to money that otherwise we might need in the future.
Well, and I think it's sometimes what I find, and just talking with people on a regular basis, is that keeping money sitting there in a checking account, even though we all know it's earning zero, is doing nothing. Well, no, it's doing something, just not doing anything for us. I mean, the banks are making tons of money off of it, but it's literally there just for like that security blanket for us. We like to see that money sitting there. And so we don't make extra payments on things because we don't want that account balance to go down.
That's right. So Russ, I think we need to give some real practical steps here. Like, what can we do to create equity, whether it be to pay down the house or to create equity in a policy? Like, we need to break that down.
Well, I think there's a couple options, right? So we're, you know, I think if we are trying to create equity and we're going to look at it from a little bit different angle, we can go and pay down directly at the bank. I don't suggest this in the traditional sense. I think making extra monthly payments puts you at a greater risk.
Yeah, I've told the story before of one of my clients in the past when I was in mortgage, did everything right, had flipped to a 15-year mortgage, was making extra payments, and all this kind of stuff. He had about 30%, 40% of his house value left to be paid off, and he lost his job.
Yeah, that puts you in a position of out of control, because then when you try to go back to refinance, refinance doesn't exist when you don't have a job.
Absolutely.
Now you can't get access to the money. So if you're making extra monthly payments, you are putting yourself at risk. I am telling you that there is a way to pay off your house, and there's two other options. We're going to go through those. But paying extra monthly payments on your mortgage is a bad deal for you.
All right. Nick's option one. Let's go to option two.
All right. Option two is using our insurance contract, building up cash values to go and pay down. But here's the thing. I think the way, if you're going to do that, you need to have some way to get it back if you need it. So that means you're going to have some sort of equity line on the house that's going to allow you to pull it back if you had to have it.
Okay. So let me break down what you just said. I want to make sure I understood. Let's say you had a $300,000 house or $500,000 house. You owe $300,000.
Right.
Right. And you start paying it down with taking loans from your policy.
Yeah. And put money in a policy. So I take equity, that extra $4,000 that we were saving. I'm using that to build up cash and cash values in my insurance policy. I take a loan against it, and then I can pay down on the mortgage.
Whether that's once a year, once every 2 years, whatever it is, you're taking lump sums from the policy and dumping it on the house.
I could do it monthly. I don't necessarily encourage monthly because right. It's probably too big of a maintenance hassle, but yes.
But then from there, you're saying we need to have an equity line in place for all the equity that we've been paying down so that if we ever needed it, we could borrow it back.
So as we're paying down the debt and we're building up equity, there's actually a line of credit against the house that I could go back and pull it back out without having to ask for it. Now, the problem with that is, just so you know, is that equity line interest rate will vary. It
yep.
can change.
Absolutely.
I've had and do have an equity line now. Rates do vary in those. But as long as that equity line is in place, right, and they do reserve the right, if you go read the paperwork,
yeah.
they do reserve the right to call that note, to change the terms on that note.
To limit your access
right,
to it.
There are, you know, it's not perfect,
yep.
but if you're going to make extra payments to the bank, you should have this protection layer, which is an equity line.
And by the way, just as a sidebar, if you have any amount of equity in your house right now today, 2019, do yourself a favor and get an equity line.
Get it fast, because what happens, Joey, like I had that condo in 2007, and at the time when I bought it for $85,000, there was literally one sold a month after I closed on mine for $120,000.
Wow.
So I could have gone and gotten an appraisal, used that same unit in the same complex as a comp, and probably had mine appraised close to the $120,000.
And that's where we're at right now. In the market.
I think we're, well, here's the thing. I don't know where we are, but the question is, are we closer to a top or to a bottom?
Absolutely closer to the top. So you need to get that in place. You can get it for very little to no cost and have it in place, even if you don't use the equity. Now, I will say this. When I was at the large national bank, they did limit people. If you did not have the money pulled out, they were limiting your access to equity lines. I had somebody come in and show me a letter, and they're like, hey, my equity line was $220,000. Now they're saying it's $90,000.
So whenever the crisis happened, they actually went in and lowered the credit lines to all the houses?
Absolutely.
Well, of course they did, because they knew the houses weren't worth what they used to be.
They had to limit their exposure. They got caught, you know, overexposed. So my point is, just because you have it doesn't mean that it's still going to be there, but you at least need to have it in place.
Well, it's better than having nothing.
Absolutely.
Right? $90,000 is better than zero, because if you need the money back, at least you could get access potentially to the $90,000
that
you had in there.
Now, let's jump to option three. I just didn't want to miss those two things.
No, it's important for us if we are trying to build equity, right? How do we get in a position where we know that we're free, right? The goal here is financial freedom. And as Robert Kiyosaki very clearly states it, it is income coming in greater than monthly expenses.
That's right.
So if we are using option three, this is something actually I want to kind of kick back to you, because you've been doing something very similar with your insurance policy, which I think is very systematic that may be simple for us to follow.
Okay. Well, first, in order for me to explain what I'm currently doing, I want to make a comment against the home equity maximizer account. If you're familiar with that, I'm not going to get into all the details, but simply put, people are refinancing their primary mortgage with an equity line, putting their whole paycheck on the equity line to pay it down, and then only pulling back what they need to live on from the equity line.
Now, what's the benefits to someone to doing that?
So what they're essentially doing is they're simplifying a process. They're saying you have one place to put all your income on the equity line, and then you only pull back the amount that you need to pay your bills. So you're systematically taking that extra, in the case we talked about earlier, $4,000 a month, and just chucking down that principal balance every single month, which is lowering your monthly payment on the equity line because it's an interest-only payment.
Right.
Okay, so if I lost you there, it's okay. We're going to actually do a webinar where you can actually see this in person. You can go to our YouTube channel. You can go on our Wealth Council. If you're a client, you can have access to this. So
what are we going to title that? Because it hasn't been created yet, so we need to go ahead and create a title because we only have 1,000 YouTube videos.
Man, I don't know. What do you think we should call it?
Let's say Home Equity Line Maximizer versus IBC.
Okay, I like it.
All right.
So write that down.
Yeah, search that.
So here's what the discrepancy that I found with that process is that as you use a home equity line to accomplish this goal, you got several negatives or cons. One, the interest rates on those things consistently move. They're variable. So you never know what your payment's going to be. It can benefit you because it's interest only, but it can also go the opposite way.
Right. If interest rates are rising, your payment's getting more expensive.
That's right. Second thing is that you are using someone else's banking function by using an equity line, their vehicle to accomplish your goal. So they, one, make the rules, and two, get the benefit of you using their system.
Okay.
So how can we take back that function, take back the system? And so here's what we did. Basically, about 6 months ago, I took a policy that I had, one of the many policies that I have. It had about a $40,000 loan against it already. Okay, so figure this. It's about an $80,000 policy in terms of cash value.
Right.
I already borrowed $40,000 out for another investment, and I had $40,000 of cash value. So I start taking out a loan every single month from that policy to pay my bills. I'm not going to use our specific numbers, but I'll pick a number as an example. Let's say expenses are $12,000 per month. I take the $12,000, I put it in my account, I pay all my bills out of it, and then any paycheck that I receive, which of course, you know, it varies from week to week, month to month, I'm putting all of that money back in as a loan repayment to that policy. So let's say I borrowed out $12,000 and I earned $20,000, I've put back $8,000 more than I borrowed. So it's essentially the same as this home equity maximizer account, except it's my vehicle that I own and control, and I'm systematically building more and more equity in my policy by repaying that current loan. Now, once I get to a point where I've refilled that $40,000 loan, which I'm pretty close at this point.
It's going to happen pretty quickly at that pace, yeah.
So then I either have another policy that has a loan, or that proves to me that I'm in a position to expand my system. I mean, how many times have we had that question, Russ, that, okay, well, how do you know when it's time to get a second policy or a third policy or fill in the blank?
When you're either piling up cash or you're getting ready to pile up cash.
And if you don't have a system like this that proves to you that you're making this kind of headway and this progress, and it's not just a one-time kind of a windfall, now you can, with confidence, start that second policy or third policy.
Well, and I do think what you're doing there is very simplified in its approach. is taking the gymnastics out of it. You know every single month exactly what you're going to spend, which is a budget. That's really good.
That's right.
Or a spending plan. I like the word spending plan instead of budget. That's a good twist on that.
Yes.
You have a spending plan. And then secondly, you know exactly where every extra dollar is to go. There's no like, okay, should I do here? Should I do here?
Yeah, I don't have to make a decision anymore.
It's very simplified, and that means money doesn't sit idly. Because I bet you if people would sit down and think about the cash flows that come in on a monthly basis and the time it sits before it goes back out, it's huge. Bank of America, 2016, yeah. I was looking at the financials of Bank of America. They don't ask me why. I'm a nerd. I like to look at these sort of things.
You know, just some light reading.
Right. It's just some easy reading, right? And for $50, you can go look at it too. $864 with a B, billion dollars in deposits into Bank of America in 2016. Do you know
just
how,
a few.
Yeah. Do you know how much interest they paid the people who deposited the money? Real quick question. Deposit into Bank of America. Asset for Bank of America, liability?
Liability.
Ah, see, most people would have said asset.
That's right.
You've been doing this long enough, you're not thinking like a consumer, you're thinking like a banker.
Yeah.
Interest paid, interest expense for that deposit, $1.9 billion.
Hmm.
Right?
That's generous.
That was pretty good, right?
Man.
If you did that as a percentage of the 860, that's 0.2%, right? So they paid on average 0.2% for the deposits left on hold with them.
Okay.
Now, what did they do in order to turn those deposits into an asset? Since it was a liability sitting on their books because they had to pay you back and pay you at interest back, what did they have to do in order to make that an asset for them?
They got
to
get it at work.
They had to lend it, right?
Out.
They had to find a borrower. Would you like to know how much interest earned Bank of America had in 2016?
Yeah, hit me with it.
$44.8 billion.
That's more than they paid out.
just a fraction. If you do that as a percentage, it's 5.2%.
Hmm.
So here's one more question.
Low interest rates, man. That's how are they even making it?
Yeah,
5.2?
Struggling. I mean, your business is probably operating at that 2,600% margin.
Wow.
Yeah, that's 26-to-1 ratio right there. That's nuts. That is the way banks operate. They think in those terms. So we have to also think in those terms and apply it to us. So if we are building dollars in our cash values like you are talking about very systematically and not letting dollars sit on deposit, we are not one in that point too, because that's what happens as time goes on. We build up so much cash, and it may be for days, it may be for months, and for some people it may be for years before they redeploy it, before they really ever make the decision of what to do with it. And if they were to take and put that at any level of interest, it would probably make you sick.
No question.
It'd make you sick to think of how much interest you gave away by not having a plan, not having a place. That is what's so cool about what you're doing.
Well, and let me just say this. It's a simple thing for me. I mean, as a business owner, you know the income and cash flows are all over the place. So for that to literally have a monthly paycheck now, and then to know I'm shoving everything back into it, man, that's peace of mind. Like that definitely makes it simple. The second thing that I think is how many times have I heard someone say, man, how does Nelson Nash in Becoming Your Own Banker on page 48, he says that your premium should equal your income. And people are like, wow, I get it, right? Conceptually, I love the idea that I have every dollar going through a policy, because if I owned Regions Bank, why would I put money at Bank of America? I wouldn't, right? I put it all through the bank that I own. But systematically or practically, people are like, how do you do that? Hopefully, this is a way that you can practically start putting more of your dollars through a system that you own and control and then expand over time. This is a way that I've proven to myself the ability to expand, and hopefully gives you some success. Now, one negative, you got to manage the process, right? You have to request a loan. You have to wait on it. It may take 5 days, 7 days, whatever it might be. And you have to make sure that your loan repayments get sent back up. I use online bill pay just for simplicity, but you have to make sure it gets credited. I mean, this is a human process, right? Yeah. So it's not just all perfect.
But once you set it into motion, it can kind of become very automatic in its approach. What I like about this, though, and I want to kind of wrap this up, is challenging us to think about building equity in our life insurance contract, which is the equity to my house. So if somebody says, look, I'm not going to spend the equity in my house, I'm never going to borrow against my house to go buy an investment, that can be your prerogative. I totally believe you should have that ability. So if I have a $400,000 mortgage, then I could build up $400,000 in equity in a life insurance contract and never touch it. By the way, Joey, on average, when you're in the mortgage world, what was the typical interest rate someone would have, whether in any of the kind of mortgages? You were in the mortgage world for 11 years. What's a typical interest rate average?
On average, it was probably 4.5 to 5.
4.5 to 5. Yeah. So if I'm in, let's use,
it's about 5, what it is now.
Let's use 5% as a high mark,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
If I'm in a 5% interest rate environment and I'm at a 25% federal bracket, what does that make my cost?
I mean, you're less than 4 at that point, aren't you?
Well, let's get our calculator out. 5 times 0.75, that's 3.75.
Wow.
So that is what my effective rate would be if I was able to itemize the mortgage interest, right?
Right.
Joey, in your experience, you've been in owning life insurance policies for almost 10 years, been doing it for almost 5. What is the typical 30-year internal rate of return on your life insurance policies?
It's going to be between 3 and 5%.
Yeah. So here's the thing, is if you could just earn the net after tax return of what it cost you to have the mortgage, right? So then that meant the growth on it should equal what your monthly payments are costing you. Do you have a rewards point credit card?
Absolutely.
That rewards point credit card is that death benefit. It is the access to cash. It is some of those living benefits, the chronic illness and long-term care benefits, disability benefits, some of those other things that come in these insurance policies. Just that alone, the access to money without ever having to ask anybody that's going to make you fill out paperwork, right?
Whether you lost your job or not.
Right. All of those things, and you know that comes with the opportunity. It also can come with downfall, right? You could go negatively spend those dollars. But if you did that, could I then say I have my home paid off when I have $400,000 in cash values and I have a $400,000 mortgage?
Absolutely. That you're done.
Do I have to use this money to go invest?
No.
No. If I want to, I can.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I can grow equity in two different places, and grow equity underneath the arms of the bank, or I can grow it within the arms of the insurance companies. I'll let you decide which one's better for you, but I'm going to go with the one that I'm an owner of because I don't own any of these banks.
All right. So we are about to wrap up. Be sure to check out the YouTube channel for the case study or on the Wealth Council as a client. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll catch you next time.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.